We are Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. We have three lines at the bottom. Again, we're going on Rav's statement. Rav had said that a Tzaras Saita is Aser for Yibum and doesn't need Chalitza. Because since this is talking about a woman that was Mazana while she was married. She was Mazana while she was married, so she doesn't need Chalitza. And she herself cannot have Yibum or Chalitza, and her Tzara is also Pater. Because the Torah used the word Vinistra Vihina Tma, which is the same word it used by Arias. And therefore we say there's no mitzvah of Yibum, and she's Pater from Chalitza. Zakta Gemara Masiv Rav Chisda. Rav Shimon Aimer. Biyasrei Chalitza Semiyachim Sharishin. Paitaris Sarasa. I'm sorry, I skipped. Masiv Rav Ashi. Three lines at the bottom. It says, Nichnasa L'imay L'seisar. A woman went into a room. Somebody warned his wife not to go into a room with somebody, and she went into a room with that person. V'shasi imay k'day tuma. And she stayed there the amount of time it would take to have a relationship. Asur l'beisa, she becomes asur to her husband. V'asur alecha b'truma, and she becomes asur to eat truma, because she is the site that we commonly call a site. Meaning, the woman that we don't know what happened, but unfortunately we have reason to believe that there's something inappropriate that happened. Right? She was warned not to go into a room with somebody, she did. We have no idea what happened in that room, but it is enough for us to become suspicious. More than suspicious. We have a basis for our suspicion. And therefore the Torah says she's usher to her husband. Till it's, she drinks and is exonerated. And she's also usher to eat truma. Bimeis, and if he were to die at that point, chaylethas v'loy misyavemes. She would have chalitza, but no yibum. Because she's usher to her husband, so how can we let her go to her yavim? But at the same time, she needs chalitza because she is married to the brother. It is a valid marriage, and therefore it is a chiyuv chalitza. But Rav said that a saita has the word tumma, so she's absolved from yibum and chalitza. And here we're saying that she gets chalitza. Amalach Rav, amina lachana saita vaday. I said a woman that was definitely mazana. That's when I said she's absolved from yibum and chalitza. And her tzara also has no mitzvah of yibum or chalitza. V'at amitli. And you're talking about a woman that we don't know what happened. That's why there's chalitza. We don't know she was mezana, right? We don't know she was mezana. Let's catch up with Rashi. Zok to Rashi Amid Aleph. Lebeisa nichnas imay. Four lines to the bottom. Hamakana leishtai, one warns his wife. V'yamalo, and he says, al tistri and mishploini. Lebeisa lebaila. Shema Zinso, maybe she was Mizana. Sharaglaim Ladavar, there's a basis. Sharikina Love and Istara. He warned her, and she went privately into a room. Im Kahenasi Asura Batuma, if she's an Ashes Kayan, she cannot eat Tuma, Kyalum Sakta Saita, says Nitma of Nitma Venitma Gimel Pamim, says three times the word Nitma, Echad Labau, one is to say that when we're suspicious of her, when we have the story of a Saita, we don't allow her to have relationships with her husband, Echad Labayo. She cannot marry, if you were to divorce her now, she cannot marry the man she's accused of having a relationship with, the Echad L'Truma, and she cannot eat Truma. V'lay Misyavemes, Rashi Lamed Beis, Kaimim Mefarish, the reason is explained, the Perek Kaimim de Saita, in the first Perek of Saita, Tani Mias, Chaletzas, Kasha L'Rav. So Rav's answer is, I talked about a woman that was definitely Mizana. You're talking about a woman that might have been Mizana. That's why we say Chaletzas. We don't know what happened. But had she definitely been Mizana, then the Torah says, Venistra Vihina Tuma, uses the word Tuma, to tell me that she's Usher, that she's like an Erva. It's like an Erva. There's no mitzvah of Yibum Mechalitza on her, and there's no mitzvah of Yibum Mechalitza on her Tzara as well. There's no mitzvah of Yibum Mechalitza on her Tzara just as well. That is what Rav's answer is. Frek the Gemara. Now, the Gemara's question is going to be based on a machloikas and how to understand a pasuk in Parshas Kisetze that is not talking about Saita at all. It's talking about a totally different topic. But you're going to see that the Chachamim learn that in this middle of this topic, the Torah refers to Saita as well. The Torah refers to Saita as well. And, in fact, the Braisa makes it sound like the Torah refers to a suffix Saita, to the Saita that we don't know that she was Mizana, but we are suspicious. And the Torah uses a word of Tumah. And therefore, the kasha is going to be that if you're basing your halacha rav on the word tumah, that since the Torah used the word tumah, it's saying that it's like arayas in the patras yibum and chalitza. So if you're basing your svara on the word tumah, then you have to include safik saita as well. Again, Rav had said that since the Torah used the word tumah by a woman that was mazana under her husband, that therefore there's no mitzvah yibum or chalitza on her and her tzara. Now, Rav had said that's only true if we know she's mazana, because that's when the Torah used the word tumah. We're going to try to prove that the Torah uses the word tumah even in the case when we don't know what happened, but we're suspicious what happened. The Torah still uses the word tumah, and if that's true, then Rav should expand his halacha to the fact of a woman of suffix saita, of suffix she was mazana, and Rav, the Mishnah says she gets chalitza. So doesn't that prove Rav wrong that the word tumah is not enough to make her like an erva? Now, where did we see that we use the word tumah on a suffix saita? So we have to go to a different parsha. Let's go. Now, the Gemara, Maishna saita vadai mishindachsib batumah. Why do you say a saita vadai is usher for yibum, and there's no mitzvah of chalitza? Because the Torah said tumah, which is the word used by Arias. Saita suffix nami tumah ksivaba. There is a pasuk that refers to a woman that were suspicious that she was mazana. We don't know what happened. She went privately into a room, and yet the Torah uses the word tumah. The Tanya. Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur, Raimim Mishim Rav Lazer. Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur says in the name of Rav Lazer, Hamachzir Gerushasim Ben Anisuin. One who gives, who returns his grusha, meaning, he brings, the halacha is, a man that divorces a woman, and she remarries, and then the second marriage is over, either through divorce or to the death of the second husband. The first husband cannot take her back. That's the halacha. It's an issur called Machzir Gerushasai. Again, Reuven is married to a woman. He divorced her. She married Shimon legally, perfectly legally. She was a divorcee. She married Shimon. Shimon either divorced her or died. And now Reuven wants to remarry her. There's an issur called Machzir Gerushasai. Now, when is there an issur of Machzir Gerushasai? If she consummated the marriage with the second man, or if she had kedushin with the second man. Let's say the second man would have only done kedushin, never consummated that marriage, and then he died, or he divorced her. Now she wants to go back to her first husband. Can she go back to her first husband? She did get, quote-unquote, married, but she never consummated the marriage. At what point does the Isser Magzu Grushasai kick in? So that's a Machloikis Tanoim. The Tanya Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur Raimim Mishum Rabbi Lazer. Hamachzir Grushasim and Hanisuin Asura. If they consummated the marriage, then she cannot go back to her first husband. But Erisin Muteres. Erisin, it's Mutter. From Erisin, all she had was Kedushin, and the second husband never consummated his marriage. She's allowed to go back to the first husband if he divorces her or dies. Why? Because there's a very interesting pasuk, and I'm going to read the pasuk. The pasuk says, the first husband who divorced her cannot to take her back as a wife after she became hutama. Now, hutama means a relationship. We wouldn't refer to hutamah because she had kedushin. Hutamah must mean that she had a relationship with the second husband, right? The Torah is saying he cannot take her back since she consummated a relationship with her second husband. That's why he cannot take her back. That's what it says. So Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur says, you see that the issur is only because she had a relationship with the second husband. Legal. Perfectly legal. But she had a relationship with the second husband. But if she never consummated that marriage, there would be no issur of Machzir Gerushasai. That's what Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur says. The Chachamim aimrim, achazu v'achazu asura. And the Chachamim say, no, they're both asur. Whether it's erisin or nesuin. So why does it say the word hutama? Doesn't hutama refer, let's say, about a relationship? The answer is, the rabbis cite the shenistera. Achreyahu shetama is not talking about machzir gerushasai. This is the way the pasuk reads according to the rabbanon. Vayucho ba'alo rishon ha'shashucha loshuv lekachta liyisloi le'isha. A first husband cannot take her back as a wife. Period. End of story. whether the second husband consummated the marriage or didn't consummate the marriage, it was a second husband, and since it says a second husband, he cannot take her back. End of story. Then the Torah says a new halacha. Acharei ashehu tamar. A husband cannot live with his wife after she went privately into a room with a person when he warned her not to. That means the Torah is alluding to a totally different story. Acharei ashehu tamar is not referring back to the story of Machzir Gerushasai, because as the Rabbanim point out, why is that called tumah? Why is that called tumah? There was nothing wrong. Tumah refers to something wrong. She lived with her second husband perfectly legally. Why would the Torah call that tumah? Therefore, the Rabbanan say, it must be talking about something wrong. What's wrong with the second marriage? Why does the Torah refer to a woman's second marriage as hutamah? Therefore, the Rabbanan say, this is a separate isser. There are two isurim in this pasuk. One, a person cannot marry a woman, his wife, who he divorced, who got married to somebody else, and now he wants to remarry her. At any stage of the second marriage, whether they consummated it or whether they didn't consummate it. Then the Torah says, there's an Isser Lav to stay married, to live with a woman that was Mizana under the husband. If Reuben's wife was Mizana, Nistera. If Reuben's wife went into a private room after she was warned, then there's a Lav to stay married to her, to live with her. And the Torah refers to that as Tumah. And since the Torah refers to that as Tumah, so according to Rav, there should be no mitzvah chalitza and yibum, even when the woman, we don't know what happened. She might have been Mizana, she might not have been Mizana. But the Torah wrote, Achrei Ashu Tamar, the Rabbanan say, L'Rav is Saita Shenistra. It comes to include a Saita who went privately into a room. That means it's a suffix Saita. It's not sure that she was Mizana. It might have been Mizana. Yet the Torah says the husband cannot have a relationship to her. Acharei asher hutama. The Torah refers to that going into private as hutama. And Rav told us whenever the Torah uses the word tuma, the Torah means to say no chalitza and yibam. But the Mishnah said yes chalitza. So doesn't that prove Rav wrong that the word hutama does not necessarily mean no chalitza or yibam? And for the Gemara, my nistra nivela. Sorry, no. It's not umay, they changed the word. My nistra nivela. The chachamim there don't mean she went privately into a room. The chachamim meant she was mizana. The Torah made a lav for a husband to live with his wife if she was mizana under him. Not if she went privately into a room. We don't know what happened in that room. The Torah doesn't call that tuma. The Torah only calls tuma if we know she was mizana. So my karle nistera. So why did the Brisa use the word nistera, which means going into a room? Lishnamal yinaka. It was a nice way of saying the Brisa didn't want to say that she was mizana. So the Brisa said they went private into a room, but the Brisa meant that we know what happened in that room, and what happened in that room was an act of nus. Frakti gemara nivela tuma behedik sibbe. I don't need a pasuk of akri hash tuma for nivela. We already have the pasuk of nistra v'hinitma. It already said that a husband, that she's tamei to her husband if she was mizana, right? So why did it have to repeat in Parshas Kisetze, akarei ashu tamo, which according to the Rabbanan is referring back to Saita? It must not be the regular, the definite woman that was mizana, the woman that was definitely mizana, because that's already known from the Parsha in Nosai. So must be it's talking about a woman that we don't know what happened. And for the Gemara, no, lemekim alei belav. No, it's coming to tell me that it's a lav, that if he were to live with this woman, he would transgress a lav. The lav of lo yuchal achrei ashehu tamar. We're taking that pasuk that says lo yuchal ba'al harishon to take her back as a wife, and then it says achrei ashehu tamar. So the Rabbanim say that the Torah here wrote two laven. One lav to marry your divorced person, to marry a woman he had divorced, who got married to somebody else, whether the relationship was consummated or not. And the second lav is, a husband cannot have a relationship with a woman who was mizana under him. Two separate lavim. One is referred to by the word achrei ashehu tamar, which is going back at the beginning of the pasuk, lo yuchal ba'al harishon. The first husband cannot take her back. Achrei ashehu tamar means he cannot have a relationship with her. That's the Rabbanan's way of understanding the pasuk. Rabbi Yosi ben Kippur says, this pasuk has zero to do with Saita. It's talking about Mahzik Rushasai. And it's saying that a first husband cannot take back his wife if she consummated the marriage. If she did not consummate the marriage, then he can take her back. That's what he learns in the word Akriyashu Tumah. The Rabbanim do not like to use the word Tumah for a woman that didn't do anything wrong. Why are we calling it Tumah? So therefore they say it must be referring to a woman that committed an indiscretion. And that means she had Znus. Now, originally we thought a woman who committed indiscretion and went privately into a room. And we don't know what happened. And we wanted to prove from there that the word Tumah is even used on a suffix Saita. We answered no, that it's talking about that she was Mizana. We know she was Mizana. And the Torah is writing a lav that a husband who lives with her after that would be violating a lav and would be subject to malchus or whatever other punishment there is for a lav. Rashi, mina nesuin b'shenisus la'achar, she married somebody else. Umeis a yirsha, he died or divorced her. That is the isra of machzik grushas. Mina erison shenisarsa la'achar, she had kedushin. Umeis mutaris la'achzik l'rishin. This is the shita of Regesi Ben Kippur, who says she's allowed to remarry the first one. Achazu v'achazu asura, d'chsev v'hoisel ish achar. V'havaya hainu kedushin. Havaya refers to kedushin. Uchsev la'yuchu b'aylu harishan ashashocha. The first husband who sent her away cannot take her back. Even after Kedushin, because it said the word V'holcha V'hoysa L'ishachar. Hoysa means Kedushin. And the Rabbanim do not use the Pasuk for Saita. I'm sorry, they use Akharashu Tamah for Saita. Therefore, the Torah never mentions consummating a marriage. It talks about she married somebody else. Any stage of marriage, even Kedushin. Hoysa. Hoysa means Kedushin. Now, Rabbi Yosef Ben Kippur says, but the Torah said afterwards, Akharashu Tamah. Tamah refers to some kind of physical relationship, right? The Rabbanim say, Akharashu Tamah is not talking about Mahzik Grushasai. It's talking about Saita, and therefore does not reflect the Mahzik Grushasai. So we end up with a machloikas, whether Mahzik Grushasai after Kedushin is usher or not. Rabbi Yosef Ben Kippur says it's not prohibited, and the Rabbanim say it is prohibited. And the argument is based on whether Akharashu Tamah refers to Mahzik Grushasai, and therefore would be indicating that Mahzik Grushasai is only after there was a physical relationship. And the Rabbanim say Akharashu Tamah is not talking about Mahzik Grushasai, therefore it doesn't reflect the Mahzik Grushasai at all.
Ravine?
Yes.
Ravine?
Yes, I'm listening.
So from this pasuk, so we have the law according to Rabbanim that he can't live with a Vadai Saita, right?
Correct.
Okay, but again, this is not the main parsha of Saita.
That doesn't mean anything. The Torah wrote the law here.
Isn't there another law also in parsha Saita?
No, it doesn't say a law. It just says it's prohibited. But it doesn't say that it's do not do it. We learn it out from the word Tumah, that it's prohibited. But not that it's a lav. Doesn't say don't do it. It just says she becomes tummy, which means stay away from her. But it's not a lav. It's an inference. It's not a specific prohibition. Zakti Gemara.
When we're talking here, that there were people knew that. I mean, the point is like this: is that in Parsha Saita, you don't have to see the whole action, correct?
Again, so yesterday I mentioned, I will say it again. We are used to talking about Parsha Saita, about a woman that we don't know what happened. In reality, that's called a Suffix Saita. That is not a Vadai Saita. That is called a Suffix Saita. We don't know what happened. That is called a Suffix Saita. That is not a Vadai Saita. Right? So now, a Vadai Saita is referenced in the Parsha of Saita, and it just says the word Nitma. It doesn't say anything else, because the thrust of the Parsha of Saita is to talk about a Suffix Saita. How do we exonerate her? In the Parsha it mentions that if she was Mazana, she's called Nitma, which says she's sullied. She is not allowed to her husband. But it doesn't say the word do not. There's no explicit prohibition. So the Rabbanon say, the Torah wrote the explicit prohibition in Parshas Kiseitse. In the middle of the Parsha of Machzik Rishasai, the Torah threw in also Saita. Now originally we thought the Torah threw in even Suffix Saita, because the Brisa used the word Nistara, which meant private in a room. We're saying Nistara is a code word in this Brisa for having a definite relationship. And therefore the Parsha is talking about a Vadai Saita, not a Suffix Saita. A Suffix Saita would need Chalitza. A Vadai Saita is Tumah. Tumah, Rav says, absolves her from Yibum and Chalitza. That's Rav's Chiddush, but that's what Rav says. Zakti Gemara, Reb Yaitzi Ben Kippur, La B'Saita Lesley. Reb Yaitzi Ben Kippur that says the Pasuk is talking about Mausi Grushasai. He says there is no Lav. It is prohibited for the husband to have a relationship with her. But if he does, he does not violate a Lav. Bafilu Zinoinami. Even if we know for sure she was Mizana, the husband's not supposed to have a relationship with her. It's not a lav, because my taima havaya ve'ishes k'sibbe. The pasuk by Machzik Rishasai is talking about somebody that married another man, right? It's not talking about being married to a husband and being mizana. Read the parsha. It says she went and married another man. He shouldn't take her back. Why in the world do you think over here that we're referencing Saita in the middle of the parsha? That's not what the pasuk is talking about. Pasuk's not talking about a woman that was mizana while she's married. The pasuk is talking about a woman that got married after she got divorced. It says havaya v'ishas. It says v'hol chavaitzel ishakar. She went and married a second man. Where do you see Saita here? Rabbi Yaisi Ben Kippur does not see from the words Achriyahush Tama that we're talking about a whole different story. He said, I see the story of Mavzi Guru Shasai. I don't see the story of Saita here. Rashi. Rabbi Yaisi, the Muki Kula Krab of Mavzi Guru Shasai. He learns the whole pasuk is talking about Mavzi Guru Shasai. Lav b'Saita mezana tachas b'ayla leslai. He doesn't hold of a lav by Saita. Ba'filip shitulam de zanoi. Even if we're sure she was mezana. By time, Havaya be'ishas k'sivre. It says Havaya be'ishas. Looking for the Bach. Be'aisa isha hanesra lebayla. In the woman that we're talking about in Parshas Kiseitse, yes, b'havaya the k'siv be'aisa lishachar. It says she married someone else. Isha's the k'siv akiyamos ish ha'achran. Second husband died. Le'yuchol bayla harishan. Mishenisus la'achai de kedushin be'ishas. You're going to Girsha Rishon, the first one divorced her, and then she got married. Who the koi kamo below yuchal? The first one can't marry her back. That's what the pasuk is talking about. The pasuk is talking about a remarriage from a woman who got married to a second husband. Where do you see Mizana? Where do you see Saita? Av Mizana taktiv loy. So therefore we have a machloikas, how to read the parshas Kiseitse, with two nafkaminas. According to Rabbi Yaisi Ben Kippur, the pasuk is only talking about Mavzi Guru Shasai. And we derive from the word Acharei HaShehu Tama that the prohibition of remarrying a woman that the first husband divorced and she got remarried is only if the second husband consummated the marriage. If the second husband did not consummate the marriage, there is no prohibition of the first husband remarrying her. That's Rabbi Yaisi Ben Kippur's opinion. He also says there is no lav for a man to live with his wife who is mizana. It is prohibited, but it's no lav. The Torah never directly said, do not. The Torah insinuated, referenced that it's prohibited. But if a person were to do it, he did not violate a lav. Meaning if he gets warned, he does it anyway, he would not get malchus. There's no lav. Because according to Rabbi Yaisi Ben Kippur, there is no mention of Saita in Parshas Kiseitse. It's not talking about that. It's talking about Mavzi Guru Shasai and Mavzi Guru Shasai only. The Chachamim argue on two fronts. They say Achrei HaShehu Tama would not refer to a remarried lady. What did she do wrong? It's not Hutama. Therefore they say, the Torah is referencing Saita, that a woman who is Mizana under her husband has a lav. And therefore, they say, Parshas Mazdi Gerushasai doesn't need that the second husband consummated the relationship. V'holcha v'hoysa. As long as there was kedushin, the person cannot take her back. And that the Torah is writing an extra law in this pasuk, that a woman that was mezana under her, while she was married, is not, there's a law for her husband to live with her. And if he's warned, he would get malchus. He would receive malchus. So there's a two type machloikus here. A two-part machloikus here between Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur and the Rabbanan. Whether there's, what is the Isra Mavzer Grushasai entail? Do you need the second husband to have consummated the marriage? Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur says yes, the Rabbanan say no. And there's a second machloikus. A husband whose wife is Mizana, and then he has relationship with her, is he violating the law or not? Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur says there's no such law, and the Rabbanan say yes, there is, in the words, Achrei Ashehu Tama. Because we brought in the sugya of Magzi Gurushasai, we are now going to leave the sugya of Saita. We're finished with the sugya of Saita. We had Rav's halacha. Right, we're finished with it. Rav, this was Rav's chiddush. It didn't say it in the Mishnah that a woman that's mezana under her husband is considered like an erva, and if her husband dies, there's no mitzvah of chalitza or yibum, not on her, not on her tzara. We're finished with that statement of Rav. We tried to disprove him. We did not disprove him. We did not prove him. We did not disprove him. We're moving on to the next sugya. And the next sugya is because we brought in the sugya of Magzi Grushasai, we now want to discuss Magzi Grushasai vis-a-vis Yibum. So here is a person that remarried his Grusha. He violated the law, right? His wife. He divorced his wife. She got remarried, whatever stage of remarriage you want it to be, it makes no difference. She got divorced, or widowed, and she went and remarried her first husband, which is illegal, but valid. It's a law, according to everybody. Her first husband's not allowed to remarry her. Right? Machloik is at what stage of the second marriage. But whatever stage it was, there's a law for the husband, the first husband to take her back. He took her back. And now she's married again to her first husband, illegally, but validly. And now the first husband dies. Right? He dies and he has two wives. The one that he married illegally, and then the one that he has a second wife. What is the status of Yibum and Chalitza vis-a-vis those two women? Again, we're not talking with Sait anymore. We talked, since we brought in the Parsha of Magzi Gerushasai, we are now entering a new Shaila. That is, a guy who violated the law. He took back his divorced wife. He remarried her. Illegally.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Is the issue going to be whether a problem with one wife infects, so to speak, the relationship with all wives?
Well, we had that by Erva, right? We had by Erva that a problem with one wife infected all wives. That was by Erva. Rav expanded it to Saita, and he said a problem with one wife infects all wives. By regular Chayvei Lavan, it does not. Meaning, if Ruvei married a Mamzeres, which is a lav, and a regular woman, and he dies, the fact that Yibum can't be done to the Mamzeres, but there is Chalitza, does not infect the other wife at all. We're dealing with Magzi Gerushasai only because the word tumah was used. Again, the Torah did use the word tumah in the parsha. Achrei Ashehu Tamah. It's an uncommon term to be used by a lav. In fact, she didn't even do anything wrong when she married the second husband. Yet the Torah used the word tumah. What is the Torah trying to accomplish with the word tumah? That's what we're going to be digging into. A regular lav, we're not dealing with. If Reuben would marry a mamzeres, and a regular woman, and he died, Shimon could either give chalitza to the mamzeres, or yibum to the other woman. He could do whatever he wants. She does not get infected by the first wife being a chayvei lavan. Magzi Gerushasai seems to be a separate case, and the Gemara is going to explain why we think it might be a different case, and that's what the Gemara is going to do right now.
My other question was, when we use the term tzara, if there's two wives, they're each a tzara to each other.
Correct.
Correct? I mean, whatever one we're not talking about is the tzara. It doesn't matter the order that they got
No, not at all. No, no. Tsara means competitors. They compete for the attention of the same husband. They're called tsaras. Somebody who violated the iser and took back his grusha after she got married to somebody else. Meaning, a person can divorce a woman and take her back. There's nothing wrong with that if she didn't get married to anybody in the in-between. Right? But if she got married, then there's an iser. Right? Umeis, and then he died. Tsarasa mahu. What is the status of her tsara? Now, about her herself, we're going to say, this is going to be discussed, there's a machlokes rishonim, but we're going to assume like Rashi, that there's no chalitza for her. But there is yibum. She is a chayve lavim, and by chayve lavim there's no chalitza. But there is yibum. There is yibum. So therefore, the status of this lady is that the lady herself gets chalitza, but no yibum. We want to know, how about her tzara? That's how Rashi learns. Other Rishaitim say that the Mahzik Rushasai, there's no chalitza either. But we won't get into that. Machlokes will go with Rashi. Rashi is clear that the Mahzik Rushasai would have yibum, I'm sorry, would have chalitza, even though she doesn't have yibum. An interesting point, as I will point out as we go along. Tzarasa mahu, what is the status of her tzara? Can you do yibum or not? Zok Rashi, Tzarasa mahu li hisyabim. Can you do yibum? Tzarasa kemaisa, the gamar tumah marayas. Okay, let me get to the Gemara. We'll come back to this Rashi. Zok to Gemara. Aliba de Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur loyti bayilach. According to Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur, the word achri hashahu tamah was referring to Mahzi Gurushasai. And it used the word tumah. He says that the word tuma is written by Magzi Grushasa. Tsarasa Kamaisa. It's no different than every other erva that we say, since the Torah calls it tuma, that the tsara is infected, I like that word, is infected by the erva. So over here, the tsara of the Magzi Grushasa would be infected by the Magzi Grushasa. Right? Now, interestingly enough, and this is where there's a machlokes rishonim, Rashi seems content to learn that this infection would only affect yibum and not chalitza. Because usually the word tumah takes away chalitza. Rav said it by saita. We say by all the arayas. Here we're saying that nobody is thinking that there should be no chi of chalitza to the mahzik grushasai or to her tzara. There's no such thought. That even though the Torah called it tumah, it doesn't really mean the severity of tumah of regular arayas. It just means to say that it shares the property that whatever is prohibited to this woman is prohibited to her tzara as well, which is yibum, because the Torah said the word tzara. But it doesn't mean to say the word tumah. But it doesn't mean the full force of the word tumah. Now, Tosfos is bothered by that because he says the word tumah means no chalitza either. So he learns totally differently in the Gemara. But since we learn with the Gemara and Rashi, we're going to have to accept, and it's a very hard thing to explain why, that even though the Torah uses the word tumah, it does not mean the full force of tumah that removes chalitza. It just means no yibum. And since it calls a tumah, by tumah we find that the tzara gets infected. So over here also, the infection of Magzi Grushasai would infect the tzara and not allow the tzara to have yibum. That's the, according to Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur, because the Torah did call Magzi Grushasai tumah. The imishum d'chsibba te'evahi. I, the Torah, used the word she is an abomination, which seems to indicate only her, not anybody else. Right? It doesn't mean to exclude her tzara. It means, he ta'eva vein bana ta'evim. If he remarries the grusha, they have children, the children are kosher. Don't think that the children are abomination. Ta'eva he. She is an abomination, not her children. Hatzarasa ta'eva. But the tzara is a ta'eva. According to Yaisi ben Kippur, the word tumah tells us that whatever applies to the Mahzik Grushasai applies to her tzara as well. No chalit, no yibum. Let's catch up with Rashi. Tzarasa maoli yisyabim. Tzarasa kamaisa, The Gomer Tumma Marayas. We're using the word Tumma, that just like by Arayas, the Torah uses Tumma, and it infects the Tzara. Over here also, the Torah uses Tumma, it would infect the Tzara. For Yibum only, not for Chalitza. The Mashma Miuta Hivaloi Tzarasa. He seems to exclude not the Tzara. We can say he is to exclude her children. The aim that her children is not possible to Gehuna. Right? That's what we can say. Zog to Gemara.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi, can I just, this is just a general interpretation question. Why do we say that because it uses a different word here, or it seems to, I should say, because it points her out using Tueva, why do we say that that must exclude somebody else as opposed to saying it only includes her? Why don't we say just because it refers to one person here that it only refers to her and excludes the rest of the universe?
It could have said, because the pastor could have said, Ki Tueva lefnei Hashem. It's an abomination in front of Hashem to remarry your grusha. That's what the pasuk could have said. The Torah did not have to say she is an abomination. The Torah could have said the act of remarriage to a woman that got divorced and remarried is an abomination. Why did the Torah use the word kitaiva? He, she. So you're right. You're 100% right. Truthfully, you should exclude everything else. You're 100% right. But the Torah did use the word Tumma, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur, which seems to say it has the property of Tumma, which infects Tzara. So we're left with two opposite drushes, for lack of a better word. One seems to imply that she infects the Tzara, and one seems to imply that it's limited to her. So how do we reconcile those two? Right? So therefore, the Gemara assumes at this point, and the Gemara is going to question this later, that the reconciliation of the two is, she infects her Torah, but her children are not infected. He is to exclude the children, and Tuma is to include the Torah. Like a compromise. We'll include one and exclude somebody else. Because usually, Tumah results with the kids being prohibited to kahuna. Usually, Tumah refers to krisis, kids are mamzerim. Here, the Torah used the word Tumah, but the kids are not infected. Why not? Because it says he. But he also excludes Sarah, like you pointed out, excludes everybody. But it says Tumah. So to reconcile the two at this point, the Gemara is comfortable saying that to reconcile the two, we will say Sarah is included, and children are not included. But we're willing to infect the Tzara to her level, which Rashi learns, again, not so simple to understand, that even though the Torah called it Tuma, the Torah never meant to exclude Chalitza, all it meant to do is exclude Jibum. Even though normally Tuma excludes Chalitza, Rashi learns that the Gemara understands that over here it's only Jibum, not Chalitza.
Right.
Yes.
So this Tueva is only Masir Grushoso, but not an Anakorian who marries a Stan Grushoso.
It's not what the Torah is talking about, correct. Doesn't say it over there. We're talking about Masir Grushoso. According to Yossi ben Kippur, we're only talking about Masir Grushoso. And the Torah called it Tueva. That's what the parsha is talking about. I'm sorry? It's not a Kayan. Who says we're talking about a Kayan?
I thought you said because we're not talking about the children. The only thing with the children would be that they would not be Kohanim.
One second. Hold on. Again, if a Yisrael marries an Erva, are the kids, what are the kids? Mamzerim. Can they marry a Kayan? No. Right? If a Yisrael marries Magzik Rishasai, the Torah called it Tumah. What happens to the children? It's a, their offspring of a relationship that the Torah referred to as Tumah.
So they wouldn't be able to marry either.
That's the question. Comes along the passage and says, he, no. Only she, not the children. That they can marry Kahanim. Meaning, without the word he, I would think the fact that the Torah called it Tumah does something to the children as well. Comes along the word he and says only her. Now Harvey pointed out correctly that we should say only her, not her children and not her co-wife. But since the Torah called it Tumah, the Torah seems to be saying it doesn't affect somebody else. Tumah affects other people. So we have to reconcile. Obviously, Tumah is going to include somebody, and he is going to exclude somebody. So we say we exclude the children, and we include the Tzara, that she's no longer eligible for Yibum. That's what we're saying, according to Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Kippur.
Okay.
Let's read it inside. Now, Alibid Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Kippur, Tumah b'magzik rishasa d'chsiva. Tzarasa k'maisa. So the Tzara would be the same. I, Mishum d'chsiva ta'iva he, and he seems to exclude everybody else. No. He ta'eva, v'ein b'nao ta'eva. Ha'tarasa ta'eva, because it's called Tumah. Rashi. Zok Rashi, imishim d'chsiv ba'ta'eva hi. The mashma miyuta hi v'loi tarasa. It seems to exclude anybody else besides from her, which seems to exclude the tzara, right? Ikele midrash miyuta b'neha. The ein bito ha'men absula lakuna. Her daughter is not pasul lakuna. That's what it seems to exclude. That's all. So, that's no shayla. So according to Abayi Ben Kippur, we're very comfortable according to this point. To say that the Tzara has no Yibum, but yes Chalitza, which again is a difficult thing, because it did use the word Tumah, but we're saying Tumah only means to the half point, no Yibum, but yes Chalitza, and the children are fine, but herself and her Tzara cannot have Yibum, can only have Chalitza, biblically, because the Torah called it Tumah. Very unusual, because usually biblically, Yibum and Chalitza go together. Rabbinically, we find only Chalitza. Here, the Torah would be calling it Tumah, the Torah would be banning Yibum, but the Torah wouldn't be banning Chalitza. That's what we're saying. Kiti Bailach, where is we have a Shaila? Aliba Durabanan. Now, the Rabbanan said that Akri Hashu Tumah is not referring to Machzik Gurushasai, it's referring to Saita. But it's written in the Parsha Machzik Rishasai. We have a rule that says, "A mikra yaitzi midei pshutai," that every pasuk has to be learned pashupshat. You have to learn it without drushas. You read the pasuk, you don't see saita. You see Machzik Rishasai. We said that it's referring to saita, but it's written in the Parsha Machzik Rishasai. So maybe the Torah means to say that Machzik Rishasai is also called Tumah. Maybe the Rabbanan agree that Tumah is for both. They say that the Torah wrote it here for Saita. But the fact that the Torah inserted it in the Parsha Machzik Rishasai, it's to tell me that the Lav is for Saita, but the aspect of Tumah applies also to Machzik Rishasai, that the Tzara should not be able to have Yibum. Maybe this much, we're not going to learn that it's going on Machzik Rishasai, the Lav is going for Saita. But the Torah wrote it in the Parsha Machzik Rishasai. We have a rule that you have to be able to read a pasuk, Pashup Shat. Reading a Pashup Shat says, there's a reference here to Machzik Rishasai. You can't deny that. But on the other hand, we said it's not referring to Machzik Rishasai, it's referring to Saita, because Tumah refers to Saita. Now, does that mean that the Torah is saying zero Machzik Rishasai? Machzik Rishasai has no aspect of Tumah? Or maybe the Torah is saying, Akri Hashu Tamos, referring to Saita. But we wrote it here to tell me that Machzik Rishasai has an aspect of Tumah as well, that no Yibum. That's the question. Let's read it inside. Avagav the Amar Rabbanan Tuma b'Saita d'Chsev. Even though the Rabbanan said the Tuma is by Saita, Ein Mikra Yaitz Midein Shutai. The Maisa, the Torah wrote it by Mamzik Rishasai in the Parsha Mamzik Rishasai. Now the Lav is not referring to Mamzik Rishasai. The Lav is referring to Saita. But it's written in Mamzik Rishasai to allude to us, to teach us, to hint to us that there is a certain aspect of Tumah by Mamzik Rishasai. What aspect of Tumah are we going to say? We're going to say that she's also Le'ivim and so is her Tzara. Or maybe, Idilma, or maybe, Kibin the Yakar Yakar. Once it's Saita, it has nothing to do with Mavzigur Shasai. It doesn't teach us anything about Mavzigur Shasai. There is no Tumah by Mavzigur Shasai. And you can do Yibum to the Tzara, and Chalitza, and Mavzigur Shasai, you wouldn't be able to do Yibum for a different reason, because she's also, we'll talk about it different time, but there would be no biblical prohibition, because there's no Tumah by Mavzigur Shasai. It's referring to Saita. But it's written by Mavzigur Shasai. Does that teach us anything about Mavzigur Shasai? Not a lot, because it's referring to Saita. But it's teaching us that there's some aspect of Tumah. Maybe the Rabbanan agreed to that aspect of Tumah. That's the Shaila of the Gemara. According to version number one, that is the Shaila of the Gemara. That means, according to Abdi'ezi ben Kippur, we know the halacha. The Torah called Ma'azugur Shasei Tumah. That means she infects others. Like every Tumah infects others. But the Torah wrote he. So we have to balance it out. So we say she infects others like Tumah. She doesn't infect her children because it says he. So according to Abdi'ezi ben Kippur, we're very confident in where we are. The question is, according to the Rabbanan, they said Achreya Shutamah is a lav for Saita. Nothing to do with Mavzik Rishasai. But the Torah wrote it by Mavzik Rishasai. And we have a rule that we like to read Pashup Shat in the Pasuk. So maybe the Torah is alluding that in one way, Mavzik Rishasai does have properties of Tumah that she would infect her Tzara. Or maybe it's not alluding to anything about Mavzigur Shasai, and she doesn't infect anybody in any way, and she's 100%, her tzara is completely mutter for everything. That is the Shaila of the Gemara. Ikedi Ami. Others learned the Shaila the exact opposite way. Alima de Rabbana Leiti Bayalach. The Ikedi Ami says, according to the Rabbana, we have no Shaila. Even the Issachar. It's not talking about Mavzigur Shasai. It's talking about Saita. There's no reason to assume that there's any reference here to Mavzigur Shasai. The Gemara in the second Lashon disputes its Shaila of the first Lashon. That maybe it's also alluding to Mavzigur Shasai. No, it's not. According to the Rabbanan, it's talking about Saita and Saita only. What's the Shaila? Hitiboy loch alibad Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur. My. Even though he said Tumah is by Mavzigur Shasai, but Miat Rachmana he Teva, then Tarasa Teva. Maybe Harvey is right. He excludes everybody. Even though the Torah called it Tumah, that was to teach me that Mavzigur Shasai is only Asar after she consummates the marriage with the second husband. But maybe, as far as anybody else being infected, the Torah said she is the only one that gets infected. No one else. Even the Tzara. It says Tumah. Tumah is to tell me something else. Not to tell me that she infects. Or maybe not. Maybe you were right to say that we compromise. She does infect the Tzara. She doesn't infect the children. So again, the second Lashon is saying, according to the Rabbanan, we are confident that she doesn't infect anybody. The Shaila is only in Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur. The Torah called her Tumah. Tumah infects. But the Torah also wrote he, that she doesn't infect. Now, in the first Lashon we said, we compromise. In the second Lashon we're saying, maybe no. Maybe Tumah is just to teach us that you can't marry the Mavzigur Shasai only after she consummated the marriage with the second husband. But maybe it does not mean any infection at all, because it says he, and he excludes everybody. Or maybe not. Maybe Tumah does infect the Tzara, and the children are Mutter, but the Tzara is Aser. So there are two versions of the Shaila of Yehuda. Either it's a Shaila of the Rabbanan, does she have any aspect of Tumah to infect her Tzara, but according to Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur, she definitely does? Or is it the Shaila of Rabbi Yaisi ben Kippur? Is Tumah infectious in this case or not because of he? And according to the Rabbanan, it's talking about Saita, it's definitely not infectious. That is the two versions of the Shaila of the Gemara, and tomorrow we will see Emet Hashem how the Gemara tries to prove it. Have a wonderful day.